It's Web Talk Guys Radio. Thank you for joining us and listening today. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana right over here. We're both bringing you, once again, news on the future of the internet, because we have our crystal balls out. Well, maybe Rob has his crystal balls out.
No, you have one, too.
Anyway, we're going to tell you about the future of internet and technology.
Right from the voices of the people on the bleeding edge of the changes that are happening on the web every day. We are definitely glad that you joined us this week as we navigate the tech world from the Iraq War to the buzz around a new version of Windows to the new CEO of the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers.
Both Rob and I are in the thick of it every day, so we're just bringing that to you, a little context, I guess. We work for .coms. We are also consulting on website development, and Rob does website marketing, and we're both
Streamies.
We do a lot of streaming media for companies and for ourselves. Hey, Rob, what's coming up on the show this week specifically?
Like I mentioned just a second ago, we're going to be talking about the new version of Windows that's coming down the line, and I'm sure that maybe you've heard whispers of it over the last few months. It's called Longhorn.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. And Microsoft is busy up there trying to come up with the next generation of Windows, which has a lot of changes and a lot of things that you need to know about that are coming down the line.
Which may or may not be called Windows in the future.
That is a good point, but you're giving away all the secrets, Dana.
Stay tuned.
We're going to be speaking with Brian Livingston, who is a contributing editor to InfoWorld magazine. And he lives right up here in the Seattle area and has authored almost a dozen books on Microsoft, including his recent Windows ME Secrets. And that's not Windows ME Secrets, that's just Windows ME, you know, the operating system, Windows
ME. We got it.
Okay.
We didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday.
And he's going to give us the scoop on what's happening with Microsoft's next generation operating system.
Longhorn is something that will probably be called Windows 2005, or maybe even a name that doesn't have Windows in it. New version of the operating system will not run any of your existing Windows software. Microsoft has said that it is going to have to rewrite all of the Microsoft Office suite, and other people are going to have to rewrite their applications as well.
A bit later in the show, we'll be joined by the new CEO of the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. You may know them as ICANN, Dr. Paul Toomey, and he'll tell us about his plans for leading the group that's responsible for domain name protocols.
We're not the government of the Internet. We do some very specific, narrow things around the technical administration. Now, we have to focus on doing those things very well. I think the issues like internationalized domain names, who is databases, issues around sponsored top-level domains, etc., I think that's really where our focus is to be going forward.
Some news from around the net this week. Spy museums are found online. Domain name traffic patterns. Big wagers on Saddam. Anti-war smart mobs are growing.
Well, Dana, I was out surfing the internet the other day, and I came across some spy museums. You know, I've had this kick of what's going on in Iraq, and I'm trying to find out all the inside information of what's happening out there. So I had to go visit some of the CIA sites out there, and I stumbled across the CIA museum out there, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So I actually went to CIA.gov, and they have a link right off of their front page that gives you information about their in-house museum that they have there, and they have actually links to photographs of some of the older spy equipment that they used back in the Cold War days. Now, they're obviously not going to show you the latest and greatest spy gadgets that they have, but some of the ones they have there are kind of interesting. You can kind of take a glimpse into the past of what the CIA used to gather information out there, and it's actually headquartered right in the building in Virginia.
Well, if you want to become more multinational and not just look at the American artifacts, go to coldwar.org. That's the Cold War Museum. Rob found that too, shared it with me. It's the history in the background of the Cold War. That's the 40s through present, you know, till the 90s, I suppose. Has links to other intelligence websites, including some in Russia. And there, you can get tickets for the Spies of Washington tour. And that's whenever you're in Washington, D.C., and you want to take a bus ride around to all the different places of the spies passed off secrets and, you know, maybe something from the Nixon era, you know, where they were spying on each other.
Yes, that's right. You get to see all the hot spots of where the big spy events happened.
Now, ColdWar.org.
Now, the Cold War Museum is actually just a virtual thing. It's a website right now, but they're working hard to come up with a permanent physical home in Washington, D.C., so they're trying to raise money and so they can develop that.
You guys out there heard of Who Is? Who is?
Who is who?
Who is? Something I go to all the time. That's a database basically on the web of all the domains that have been registered, and you can actually find out who owns them and their contact information mostly. Mm-hmm. Well, we have some stats that we've gathered from Who Is.
Yeah, this site that we're referring to is actually www.whois.sc. And what this is a basically a registrar on the internet that enables a person to go in and actually buy a domain name. But what they're doing is they're giving stats on how many domain names are out there and how often or how many new ones are being registered on a daily basis. And this information is fascinating because it really gives us a glimpse into how many active website domains are out there. And now when I refer to domains, that's the www.whatever.com address out there. And there's about 22.7 million active .com domains out there.
Which and we're not talking about .net, .org, those. That's just .com.
That's just .com. And there's about 3.7 million of the .net and about 2.5 million .orgs.
So over 31 million domains.
That's if you count all of the top-level domains. That would include .info, .biz, and .us and some of the others out there as well.
Another interesting stat, how many are basically expiring every day? Well, that would be 16 million on average. Wow, at least the day last week that we checked it. So there's still domains to be purchased.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about where you can purchase those, because everybody might know one of the top two, but there are more out there.
Yeah, there certainly are. And actually, there's a site out there that tracks all of these domain name registrars, and it's at registrarstats.com. And what this site does is it tracks day-to-day registration statistics on how many websites are registered on an ongoing basis, and it's basically showing that the registrar GoDaddy.com, and this is a site that sells domain names, essentially sells the registration for domain names, is the fastest growing seller on the internet. And I think there's a good reason for that.
Well, it's the price.
Mm-hmm.
I like them, too. They've got a cute little logo. I just actually registered my first domain with them about a week or so ago.
Yeah, we've mainly used register.com and verisign.com to do, and Verisign is actually Network Solutions.
They were like the only place you could go.
Exactly, early on. And they charge about $35 per year for a domain name. And I think they have specials sometimes that are less than that. But GoDaddy is $8.95 a year. So it's a significant reduction in the price. And I think it is reflected in how many new domain names they're picking up every day. GoDaddy.com actually is the only registrar that was growing on a daily basis. Most of the other ones, like Register.com and Verisign, were actually declining and growing on a day-to-day basis, but GoDaddy is increasing every day. They're up to about 2 million websites in their database and growing fast.
I would be very pleased to see Verisign fall down.
Yeah, we would too. Yeah.
We've had just terrible experience with them. We actually prefer Register, but I might migrate over. Sorry, Register. GoDaddy might be the place to go now.
That's right.
Oh, we can't stay away from war news very long, Rob.
No.
You found some interesting an interesting site about Saddam.
Yes, actually, there's some websites out there that are known for doing like sports book betting,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Betting on like sports teams that have actually got into wagering on how long Saddam is going to last over in Iraq.
Well, that's interesting. Big money's riding on that question. About $1.25 million in wagers have now landed on Saddam's head, so to speak. And this is just for him lasting in office, not necessarily dying, although they may happen simultaneously.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this was actually the wagers that existed on just one site, and it's at tradesports.com. And as of late Thursday, he had about a 90% chance of being in office through Monday. But what they were showing is a 1 in 3 chance of being in power through the end of April.
So he's probably going to make it through the weekend. Darn.
Right.
Another site, betonsports.com, it bills itself as the largest legal licensed sport book, puts Saddam's chances of remaining in Baghdad until June 30, 1 in 15. Well, June 30 is a long way off.
Yes,
I don't think
it
he's
going
to make it.
No.
I don't know. You know what I was thinking, Rob? That there's a lot of people having money riding on the fact that he has to be out of there by April 30. I think if if our military doesn't, somebody with a lot of money is going to make sure that he's out
That's
of there.
Right. They're
so
going to
they
go over
win.
There and I think they're going to hire an assassin to take care of the business for him.
Yeah. Are you listening, Tony Soprano? Well, another interesting trend in anti-war, actually anti-war movements, actually harks back to a guest we had on a while ago, but why don't you give us a scoop on that?
Yeah, actually, there's a growing trend of smart mobs out there that are using smart mob technology, wireless communication, to gather and create anti-war campaigns all across the world.
So define smart mobs so people don't know that jargon.
Well, it's basically using a mobile device or a cell phone or a phone that supports short messaging service or SMS, or basically a text messaging, to gather large groups or flocking teens to protest against the war, basically. And there's been a bunch of protests that have been fueled by this in China and in Cairo, and even in San Francisco, they've used some mobile technology to create live footage of protests that can be transmitted up to anti-war websites out there. And I wanted to mention one website that is kind of leading the anti-war movement out there, and it's protest.net. And they have a pretty comprehensive calendar of all of the campaigns that are scheduled all across the world, all around the world. And, you know, if you're interested, go check it out. We're not saying that we're in favor or against the war. We're just saying this is the information that's out there, and go check it out. It's fascinating to see how the Internet's being used in these ways. And we really haven't seen that much here in the United States, but it's happening around the world as mobile devices are getting adopted.
In fact, you mentioned a couple of places. In Africa, in South Africa, there's some use of the cell phone short messaging, SMS messaging, to incite a boycott of American enterprises that are in South Africa.
Yeah.
The ones they're targeting, of course, are KFC and McDonald's, because you can't get much more American than Kentucky Fried Chicken. but really, the people and government and the economy in South Africa are kind of putting that down, because they say, we need American franchises over here. It's money for our economy.
Exactly.
And it's kind of irresponsible. I mean, so you don't buy a Big Mac. Is that going to stop the war? I don't think so. McDonald's is not going to be able to stop the war. So
yeah, but really, this is showing the power of that smart mob type of thing that's really going to, I think, have even more of an impact in the future.
And I wanted to mention that, you know, I alluded to a guest we had on recently. If you want to learn more about smart mobs, go listen to our interview on our website at webtalkguys.com. Go to the archive page, look for Howard Rheingold. He wrote a book called Smart Mobs, and it's all the rage right now, and it'll give you all kinds of details about that.
And if you wanted to read more about the SMS campaign in South Africa, you can just go to iafrica.com.
In about a month, there'll be a big event in New York, and I hope it's nothing that's, you know, involving terrorists, but it's actually the Streaming Media New York show. So if you are like us and really into streaming media and you can get to New York, do it, because it's going to be a 3-day conference, May 5 through 8. They're going to have all kinds of about 30 interactive conference sessions. There's going to be beginner's technical workshop, because, you know, if you want to get into it, that's a great place to go. Tons of booths. I'm sure they're going to give away pins.
Yeah, and we're actually looking at attending ourselves and going back there and checking it out. But we haven't made final plans on that yet. But
we'll be looking for you.
Exactly.
Find out more information at streamingmedia.com/NY. And also, you'll see a little Web Talk Guys banner. We're part of the sponsors of the show.
Well, Dana, we got an email from a listener, didn't we, about our recent spam rant segment that we had.
Yeah, Chris wrote us. He said, guys, a delete key won't help you much with the new trend of sending spam with subjects that look like real emails. They have the subject line, hiya, or yo, or hey, Chris, or something like that. And he says, these various subject lines, they're like sheep, but they're actually wolves. And he says, resulting in useless info, porn, or sometimes other distasteful information showing up at work, or even worse, when your girlfriend is around. Oh, Chris. And he goes on to say, not to mention the ones that are sent with bad dates that sit on your back pages because you never saw them in the first place. What do you have to say to Chris?
Well, I'd say he's got a good point here. They're using a lot of techniques to kind of trick you into clicking on the email so you open it. And I would also agree with the whole point that he has about accidentally opening those porn emails when you're in mixed company is not necessarily a good thing, especially if you have kids around or your wife, and they could kind of get the wrong impression about what you're doing when it would be totally an accident.
Oh, right, accident.
So, Chris, we totally agree with your points there, but there's really nothing you can do about it other than get a spam filter or just anytime you see that kind of thing and it doesn't look familiar, delete it. Stay with us. Joining us in a minute is Brian Livingston, who is a contributing editor of InfoWorld, and he's going to tell us about the secrets of Microsoft's new version of Windows, which is codenamed Longhorn. This is WebTalk Guys Radio.
Recognize that sound? If you're taking vitamins in a pill form, that's exactly where they're ending up. Hello, my name is Dr. David Friedman. According to the physician's desk reference, vitamins in a pill form are just 10% absorbed. So for every $100 you spend on vitamins, you are literally flushing $90 of it down the toilet. If you want to start absorbing the nutrients you swallow, you need to take a product called Sea Silver. Not only does it contain every vitamin, mineral, amino acid, and enzyme known to man, but because it's in a natural liquid form, it offers a 98% absorption. That means your body gets to keep the nutrients you swallow. Try delicious-tasting Sea Silver today. You'll feel a difference or your money back. Call 1-800-285-8963. That's 1-800-285-8963. Isn't it time you stopped flushing your vitamins down the toilet? 1-800-285-8963.
Oh! You're back with Web Talk Guys Radio, and thank you for listening today. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana, right here on the other mic.
Well, Dana, up next we have Brian Livingston, who's a contributing editor for InfoWorld and is a columnist for the column eBusiness Secrets. And he's on the phone with us today to talk about Microsoft's new next-generation operating system called Longhorn. That's their secret code name. Brian, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
Let's talk about the recent unauthorized backdoor early alpha release of the Longhorn operating system for Microsoft. Was this release, Brian, a mistake on Microsoft's part? What do you think?
I don't think Microsoft was ready to release a version of its new consumer edition of Windows yet. So mm-hmm. I think this might have taken them by surprise. But it's really going to be an amazing change for users of Windows. I don't think that we will see a real consumer product until around 2005, but I think people should start preparing for the changes in it now.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about Longhorn and what its concept is and the direction it's going and how it's going to change, you know, our current experience with Windows.
Well, Longhorn is something that will probably be called Windows 2005, or maybe even a name that doesn't have Windows in it.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah.
The new version of the operating system, first of all, will not run any of your existing Windows software. Microsoft has said that it is going to have to rewrite all of the Microsoft Office suite, and other people are going to have to rewrite their applications, the packaged applications and the custom-made applications as well. Now, the benefit of that is that Microsoft, I think, is starting to take seriously all the problems people are having with security leaks and patches that they have to put onto Windows, and the kind of email viruses that people have been getting for years. And the Longhorn version of Windows should actually cut down on that by a great deal, because Microsoft pays an incredible amount of money when people contact it with problems and they need customer support. Mm-hmm. So rewriting Windows so that it won't have such security problems and it won't be vulnerable to email viruses will be so attractive to a lot of people that I think companies and individuals will switch over to this new version of Windows almost immediately after it comes out in 2005 or whenever.
Now, will the changes to the file system structure, which I've heard are coming with this, be one of the core drivers of this? And is that a way to cut down on the existing, you know, like viruses out there that tap into certain file structures?
Well, it does give you more security, but the new file system that Microsoft is talking about is actually something that they have been working on in a project called Cairo for over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a new file system that will allow you to look through all of your files. For example, you can see all of the music files. You can see all of the files by a certain artist and files of a certain format across disk drives. So you will have much more of an ability to find the stuff that you want without having to go down through a whole list and try alphabetically to look for it on your own.
So is this file structure more like what you would see in like maybe an Apple Macintosh type of experience? Is there a little bit of a merger thing going on here?
Well, the reason that Microsoft didn't come out with this 5 years ago is that it's very, very difficult to do.
Is it?
So I think it goes beyond the Macintosh filing system. It goes to something that, it's almost more like a search engine, like your entire computer would just be a big search engine.
Hmm.
And if you said, let me see all the MP3s, then you would see that. If you said, let me see all of my charts and graphs, you would see that. So how Microsoft is actually going to implement that is not obvious, but they're obviously spending a lot of time and money on it. And I think that Microsoft has had difficulty getting people to upgrade to Windows XP because the benefits, the differences, weren't that obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But the differences will be really obvious with Windows in 2005. I keep calling it Windows, but maybe we should touch on the fact that Microsoft won't call it Windows, because if it doesn't run any Windows software and Microsoft calls it something other than Windows, they would be completely free from the antitrust judge who is ruling over them for the next several years. By calling it something other than Windows, and I don't know what name they would pick,
They
then do not have to worry about things like you cannot integrate certain software into the operating system, and they are free from those restrictions.
Interesting. Now, the actual screenshots that I've seen of the pre-release version look an awful lot like XP. Is there more changes you think coming, and this is just kind of slight changes that we're seeing in the look and feel, or are they going to revamp every aspect of this by the time it gets done?
Well, I think they are planning to revamp a lot of aspects of it. One of the biggest interface changes that I think is coming up in Windows is called Sideshow, and this is a new user interface which kind of bounces off the old idea that you were going to have windows on your desktop that would constantly feed you new sources of information, sort of like the old push technology. Sideshow is something like a permanent docked strip of programs or strip of information that, for example, could be on the right-hand side of your screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have information in it like all of your instant messaging buddies. You could see who is online and communicate with them. It would have things like the traffic based on both cameras that were watching the traffic on the routes that you usually take, plus maps that would show the best, fastest route to take from where you are to where you want to go, and weather, and all of this kind of stuff. The Windows operating system would become sort of a gigantic thermometer or a gyroscope showing you what's going on in the world out there, and anytime that you want to look at it, that information would be available to you.
They've tried that concept. I think it was the Windows Channels years ago.
Active Channels, exactly.
Active Channels, yeah. Is that something that's going to come back here with a little bit more power, and if you combine that with like maybe their Spot technology that they have?
Well, I think
is that what they're trying to do?
Active Channels was taken out of Windows a few years ago because I think it had a performance hit to people that it took some CPU cycles to do, and there wasn't actually that much content that was available then. But today, and certainly in 2005, you have feeds of information that are coming from a variety of sources on the internet, and it's much easier to subscribe to something that you'd actually want to be taking up valuable real estate on your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, the things you're talking about are sort of new to me, and I know that you have your ear to the ground and your Brian's Buzz and such, and you get a lot of tips. Are you talking about things that are still very proprietary to Microsoft and kept secret, and how did you find out?
Well, various people who have been getting some of the early releases, the early tests, of this software do leak it. And so you can find this in various places on the internet. Unfortunately, it will be there one day and it'll be gone the next.
Yeah.
So I can't really give you a good accurate source. But I have started a newsletter called Brian's Buzz on Windows, which is at briansbuzz.com. And this is where I put out the information that readers send to me, and I invite people to send me tips. So as Longhorn or Windows 2005 or whatever they call it gets closer and closer, we will have better information about what's going to be in it and, more importantly, how people need to be planning for it. Because if they have to rewrite all of their Windows software for it to run on the new Windows, now would not be too soon of a time to start.
Well, sure. Are you getting any fallout from Microsoft? Are they contacting you? Are they upset with you?
Well, to be honest, I never have had a contract with Microsoft to receive any information from them for any of the 10 Windows Secrets books that I've written. So I would say that some of the people at the very top of Microsoft haven't been too happy with me, but the programmers inside Microsoft usually have been very, very nice to me because they recognize that I realize their professionalism and their skill, and I'm not trying to criticize them. I usually am trying to show people how to use some features that these programmers have put in that just didn't get into the manual that Microsoft gives you with its product.
Certainly seems like a pre-release like this sparks discussion and sparks feedback that the company needs to develop the operating system. Is that really, you think, at the core of why this was released?
Well, Microsoft has been doing beta programs for Windows with hundreds of thousands of testers. And even then, they don't find some bugs until after the product has been shipped as a shrink-wrapped operating system. And so Microsoft is not going to ever be able to develop new products completely in secret. There are too many people who are interested in finding out about this. And I think Microsoft really enjoys some of the attention that they get by being the biggest 600-pound gorilla in the software world.
Yeah, which they are. Hey, let's also talk a little bit about some of the changes that may be coming to the IE and the Windows Media Player and how that's integrated in. Have you heard any feedback or any comments on whether or not they're going to separate those like what's maybe been discussed?
Well, the changes that seem to be coming in Windows Media Player are all around the area of digital rights management. I think Microsoft is tending to go down the wrong path with this because Microsoft has tried to include more and more stringent restrictions that can be put on material that is played with Windows Media Player. At the same time, we are talking on the radio and people are watching television. People get radio and television programming for free, and they have to watch some ads or listen to some ads, but people are used to getting musical content and television programming content for free or paying a basic rate for cable, and then they don't have to pay for every single show that they watch.
Yeah.
In the music world, the music giants, and there are only about five record labels that control almost all of the music that's distributed, they are trying to make people pay for every single download and every single record that is available, and I certainly support the ability of people to get paid for material that they have copyrighted. At the same time, the record labels are fighting with one another to get their free videos played on MTV, and MTV doesn't pay the artists. The artists are fighting each other to get on MTV because just showing those videos that people can watch for free after they pay for the cable system is tremendously valuable in promotion to the artist.
Yeah, certainly really tightening down that digital rights issue actually reduces opportunity. I mean, I totally agree with you.
Well, since I can watch MTV 24 hours a day and take my videotape recorder and tape hours and hours of MTV and then play it back later whenever I want, it seems kind of funny that we would then go into a 21st century where you don't have the ability to watch or listen to music without any promotional value whatsoever. The whole idea of music is you give away some of it for free, and then people pay to go to the concerts and buy the T-shirts and things like that.
Yeah, well, certainly the whole concept of fair use is definitely being challenged here, and I'm not sure what the right answer is or what Microsoft's going to do to address that whole issue.
Yes, well, the record labels have been very slow to come up with reasonable volume pricing models, like paying, I think, musicmatch.com is one of the best ones, which is not associated with a record label. It licenses content from the record labels,
mm-hmm.
and it's $2.95 a month, mm-hmm. I think, to listen to all the music that you want across the Internet. And they also have a $4.95 program as well. But
That's a pretty good deal.
But that sounds like a really good deal to me. And I am just about to switch from buying CDs to listening to all of my music on the Internet myself.
Yeah. And especially if you can download it as an individual track. I think that's really the power of the Internet.
That's where we're going. People don't want to buy 12 songs
exactly.
at a time. They want to buy the songs or listen to the songs that
they're
most interested in.
Exactly, because usually half of the CDs, nobody's ever heard of the songs on them.
So Microsoft Windows, I think, is going to bark up the wrong tree if it's going to make it so hard for people to play their music and download music through digital rights management. We will just have to see. And fortunately, this is an area that if people don't like Windows Media Player, it may be built into Windows 2005 or whatever it's called, but that doesn't mean that people will have to use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's certainly other alternatives out there. Now, is the IE still going to be integrated? Is there any issues there?
I haven't heard that they would take Internet Explorer out. As a matter of fact, I think that the browser functionality is going to be integrated into
more
aspects of Windows in the future. Yeah. I am an advocate, actually, of having your email come to you through your browser, and you would be notified in the taskbar that you have some new mail, and you click something in your IE window, and it switches to a view that shows you your folders of email and your subject lines of email, and you can look at the ones that you want.
Mm-hmm.
When you're through with that, you click a button, and you go back to using the window like a browser.
Oh, so you're saying that you'd like to see all email come in through a web-based application? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not saying that it would all be web-based mail.
Yeah.
You can still download the email to your hard drive look at it when you're not connected to the Internet if you want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that we live in our browsers and our instant messaging and our email programs now. And I really think that there's going to be a convergence, and maybe this will happen in Windows, that when you're in your browser surfing the Internet, if an important message comes in, that browser window has something that lets you know, a little light turns red or something, and then you flip over to that view. It's just a different view of all of the information that's available to you.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Livingston's on the phone with us. Brian's the contributing editor of InfoWorld and a columnist and an author. More with Brian on the other side. This is Web Talk Eyes Radio.
Recognize that sound? If you're taking vitamins in a pill form, that's exactly where they're ending up. Hello, my name is Dr. David Friedman. According to the physician's desk reference, vitamins in a pill form are just 10% absorbed. So for every $100 you spend on vitamins, you are literally flushing $90 of it down the toilet. If you want to start absorbing the nutrients you swallow, you need to take a product called Sea Silver. Not only does it contain every vitamin, mineral, amino acid, and enzyme known to man, but because it's in a natural liquid form, it offers a 98% absorption. That means your body gets to keep the nutrients you swallow. Try delicious-tasting Sea Silver today. You'll feel a difference or your money back. Call 1-800-285-8963. That's 1-800-285-8963. Isn't it time you stopped flushing your vitamins down the toilet? 1-800-285-8963.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and thanks for listening.
And I'm Web Girl Dana. We're in the middle of a conversation with Brian Livingston. He's on the phone with us talking about Microsoft and their pending new operating system, codenamed Longhorn.
Let's talk a little bit about mobile devices, and is Microsoft integrating some synchronization technology into their operating system, do you think, or they can work with the Pocket PC or be open platform to maybe Palm devices and those kind of things? Have you heard anything along those lines?
Microsoft has been trying to sell software called Microsoft Smartphone for a couple of years. I was at the CeBIT computer show in Germany last year, and Microsoft was very heavily promoting the smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for Microsoft, the big telephone manufacturers like Nokia and Motorola have chosen an operating system called Symbian.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Symbian is based in the UK and is just now starting to show up as the operating system that is being used in high-end phones, and eventually it'll become down into the cheaper phones that you will just get automatically when you sign up for a new cell phone account.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Microsoft is not going to be as successful in cell phones as it has been in PCs. I think this is a big opportunity for smaller software companies, because if you have phones with the Symbian operating system, you can program in Java, you can program in a wide variety of platform-independent languages, so that it wouldn't just run on Windows, it would run on anything.
So really, Microsoft is going to be forced to supporting these other operating systems in order to really have a complete solution for the customer, it sounds like.
Oh, the problem is, if a telephone company wants to approach Microsoft, the solution that Microsoft is going to offer is Windows. And Microsoft's business strategy is Windows, Windows, Windows. They make no bones about that. And that is not always appropriate for these little devices.
Yeah.
I think that many people enjoy the Pocket PC, and it's a good implementation of a Windows environment for a handheld device.
Yeah.
But Windows is a little bit big and clunky for something as small as a phone,
mm-hmm.
and so trying to jam Windows into these little portable devices is not always the smartest idea, but that's kind of the material that Microsoft has to work with.
Mm-hmm. And well, certainly as capacity and processing power goes up, I'm sure it's going to, that playing field is going to be leveled a little bit more, I would think, with Windows competing against those other guys.
Yes, I'm looking forward to all the processing power being in your wristwatch, but that is not going to happen by 2005. So until then, we will have this mishmash of stuff that's on your desk,
yeah.
your laptop that you carry around, the PDA that you carry around, the cell phone that you carry around. Maybe we'll have an intelligent key ring someday, and I'm looking forward to my key ring or my wristwatch, whatever. When I come close to a keyboard and a screen, the keyboard and screen becomes available to me, and I can edit my documents or whatever. And when I walk to some other PC, then that one becomes available to me with the owner's permission. But now we do have to carry around hard drives and
yeah.
CPUs and memory and all of that kind of stuff. It just isn't quite that miniaturized yet.
Well, what changes are coming to the operating system in relation to working with photos and video? Is there are those major changes and implementations and improvements within the Longhorn application that you've heard about?
Well, the applications will just get better, mm-hmm. and compression will just get better. And so I think that we will see improvements in Longhorn or Windows 2005 that will allow you to compress audio and video more than is possible today.
Mm-hmm.
with the same quality or better quality. Mm-hmm. I have talked to people who write these programs called codecs, which are compressor decompressors,
yeah.
and they've told me it really takes 10 years to get a good compressor, because you do one, and then you see places that it could be improved, and then you do it again, and then that shows you places that could have been improved. And
mm-hmm.
so it's really a very slow process. You would think, oh, this is straightforward, but the trade-off between the smaller file size and the quality of the material
yeah.
is one that just can't be easily solved.
Yeah, we've definitely had some experience with video ourselves here, and we find it to be a real challenge to figure out the formats and the encoding, and things aren't compatible with each other, and there's all sorts of issues. So I think video's got a little ways to go as far as being a consumer solution, I think.
Yes, I'd like to see a lot more broadband internet access than we have today. I know that the percentages are going up, but I was very disappointed to see that the federal government didn't make it
yeah.
a major priority to say every home in the country shall have access to broadband, and if
mm-hmm.
people choose not to use it, that's fine. But we'll make sure that, just like the post office delivers a postal letter to every place
yeah.
in the country for 37 cents, no matter where you are, you will have access to broadband internet at reasonable rates. I would have actually wanted to see it be included in the price of your local telephone bill, but
yeah.
we're not that far where the
sure.
federal government has really made broadband internet that much of a priority. And we see that people with broadband do a lot more shopping on the internet. They spend more time
mm-hmm.
on the internet in general. And so that kind of stimulus for the new economy could have been really encouraged by the government. But I think that there was such a conflict between the cable companies and the telephone companies and satellite companies that nobody ever really laid down a coherent plan as to how we would deliver broadband internet to every American within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. So is the new Longhorn operating system here, is it supporting more of a broadband orientation with how it functions?
Oh, I think so. And Microsoft made this priority a few years ago in its own development that things like the product activation feature of Windows XP, you can either activate XP over the Internet or you mm-hmm. can call a toll-free number and get your code to type in to let Microsoft know that you've only installed that on one of the machines mm-hmm. in your home or your office. Now, these are not big benefits for the consumer. These are things that are more of a benefit to Microsoft. And so I think that having always-on Internet access makes it much easier for people to surf the web and much easier for people to read their email. But I don't know if Microsoft is going to really use this in ways that are that beneficial to the consumer. One exception to that would be instant messaging, mm-hmm. that we are starting to see companies come out with products that make it possible for users of AOL instant messaging, AIM, to communicate with people using Microsoft instant messaging. And so that kind of bridge has been far too long in coming, and mm-hmm. when people are using an always-on Internet connection, instant messaging to your friends is just going to be much more prevalent.
Yeah, exactly. Now, is there a server version of this that's out there in development as well? I've heard some talk that maybe a server version isn't in the mix with this.
There is no server version of Longhorn or Windows 2005.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to come out with Microsoft .NET Server, but they killed the .NET name because the server had nothing to do with networking
yeah.
on the Internet.
Sure.
And that is called Windows Server 2003. That is the successor to Windows 2000 Server, and that is supposed to be out April 14th of this year, I think.
Oh, okay.
And so Windows Server 2003 is their new heavy-duty server operating system. They may do an upgrade for Windows Server 2003 in 2005 to allow it to access the new file system that Longhorn will have, but that is far enough in the future that I think that they'll just figure out some kind of an add-on to do rather than mm-hmm. come out with a completely new product. With Microsoft's new licensing system, which a lot of corporations have signed up for, Microsoft is pretty much committed to coming out with major upgrades of Windows every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you see Windows XP and then Longhorn, which is 2005, that's about 4 years apart, which doesn't make some of these corporations who paid for these licenses happy.
No.
But it is an upgrade path. And if the corporations and the end users survive changing all of their Windows software, I think that the new version of Windows is going to be very popular.
Now, years ago, Microsoft had a personal server application that you could get with Front Page. And do you see them adding in personal server technology more in the future with Windows, with more people maybe possibly wanting to host their own content from home? Do you see a movement in that direction?
That's possible. I don't recommend that anybody use the web server products from Microsoft at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft has had incredible problems with IIS, which is their Internet Information Server.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic security problem with Windows has a lot to do with the fact that Microsoft ships these products with services defaulting to on. And so when you install some database yeah. products, for example, you don't realize that you're installing a little web server. And if uh-huh. you're directly connected to the Internet without a firewall,
yeah.
hackers can just get in and take control of your machine and use it to send spam mm-hmm. or use it to send viruses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if people want to do websites from home, they should find a web hosting service. And I personally use a web hosting service
yeah.
that is based on Linux, and it's very secure and very bulletproof, almost never goes down. And if I had to maintain the web server myself, I think that I couldn't in any way guarantee that kind of reliability.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, we're almost out of time, but why don't you give us a little information on how our listeners can read more about things that you've written and, of course, about Brian's Buzz and what's coming up on the horizon for you?
Yes, people can go to briansbuzz.com, and that's all one word with no apostrophe, Brian's Buzz, and get a free subscription to my Windows newsletter, which is going to be biweekly starting in the month of April.
Good.
That's terrific. Is there any other sites out there that you have that people can read some of your articles and things?
Well, other than Brian's Buzz, mm-hmm. we link to my personal site, which is brianlivingston.com, and there I have a couple of columns in InfoWorld magazine called Window Manager and eBusiness Secrets. And so people can find out how to subscribe to those there. I think that the first step is really Brian's Buzz, but then the Internet is almost infinite, so you can branch out from there.
And, of course, I can purchase many of all your books out there.
Yes, my latest book was Windows Me Secrets, which covers the ins and outs of Windows Me, and prior to that, Windows 2000 Secrets, which the Windows Me Secrets book is 1,500 pages and uh-huh. really covers all of the secrets that I published for Windows 95 and Windows 98 also. So even Windows 98 users can benefit by getting Windows Me Secrets rather than getting an older book.
Brian, for all That's the writing terrific. You do, I hope you have voice recognition software.
Well, if I had to say all of these words and have the computer figure them out, I would never get the books done. Because thankfully, my fingers can fly faster than my tongue can move.
Well, hopefully, voice recognition software will get better over the next few years, and it'll give your fingers a break, right?
I'm hoping that, too. I did just write a little article about a little device that is supposed to be ready in a year or so that'll translate from Arabic to English and vice versa.
Wow.
And it wasn't quite ready for the Persian Gulf this year, but I think we're going to see some amazing technology developments in the next year or two.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, Brian, it was great having you on the show.
Very nice to be with you.
We've been speaking with Brian Livingston, who's the contributing editor of InfoWorld and writes some terrific articles for them, like eBusiness Secrets. Brian can be found online at brianlivingston.com and at briansbuzz.com. Take care and have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Joining us in a minute is the new CEO from the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. That's ICANN. And his name is Dr. Paul Toomey. This is Web.Guys Radio.
Recognize that sound? If you're taking vitamins in a pill form, that's exactly where they're ending up. Hello, my name is Dr. David Friedman. According to the physician's desk reference, vitamins in a pill form are just 10% absorbed. So for every $100 you spend on vitamins, you are literally flushing $90 of it down the toilet. If you want to start absorbing the nutrients you swallow, you need to take a product called Sea Silver. Not only does it contain every vitamin, mineral, amino acid, and enzyme known to man, but because it's in a natural liquid form, it offers a 98% absorption. That means your body gets to keep the nutrients you swallow. Try delicious tasting Sea Silver today. You'll feel a difference or your money back. Call 1-800-285-8963. That's 1-800-285-8963. Isn't it time you stopped flushing your vitamins down the toilet? 1-800-285-8963.
This is Web.Guys Radio. Thank you for listening today. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Webgirl Dana. Joining us is Paul Toomey. He's the new president of ICANN. That's the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. He's going to talk to us about his vision for ICANN's future and discuss the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead for a very successful ICANN.
Paul, welcome to the show. Tell us about your new appointment as CEO of ICANN.
I just wanted to say how delighted and excited I am to be taking up the position of CEO of ICANN. I've obviously been involved with the ICANN process pretty much from its inception and have followed it with great interest and participated in it. But I'm very excited now to be able to take over the reins of president at the time that it's in, with as we move forward and as the organization is maturing and expanding in terms of international relevance. I'm certain that I'll bring both sort of continuity of issues in the past, but also, I think, some important new perspectives. And I'm also very importantly looking forward to talking to many of the people in the stakeholder groups, in the media, etc. I'm very open to hear ideas and issues and thoughts that people have. But because although I've come from something of a governmental perspective in the last several years, as you would expect, being chair of the GAC, I recognize that's not the whole of ICANN by all means, and I'm in the new role, obviously, very open to hearing people's issues and working more closely and collaboratively with other parts of the stakeholder group.
As an Australian, you are the first non-US citizen to head ICANN. What do you think is the significance of that?
I think the significance, I suppose, it reflects another step of maturity of the organization in that it is an international organization for the administration of certain technical aspects of the Internet. And I think this is a reflection of a next era for the organization, of reflecting that it's an organization now that can have leadership from any country, really, and that it reflects an openness to a sort of full international engagement and interactivity and leadership. It's like many international organizations, companies, it takes the talent where it finds it. I think that's important. I think probably it will have some short-term significance in the American environment because it is the first time it has taken place. You know, I'm honored that in terms of choosing the CEO, they felt that I've met those standards and able to take the organization to that next stage.
What do you see as your priorities leading ICANN forward?
That's a good question. I think we are moving into a new era, and so there are definitely perspectives here. I think the priorities in the first while are a threefold one. One is that I definitely want to be engaged in outreach and consultation with all parts of the stakeholder group of ICANN internationally, I mean in North America and also internationally, particularly in parts of the academic and the technical community where I really want to get a chance to talk and listen and hear what people have got to say from their perspective, the business community, etc. So I think that ongoing stakeholder consultation is incredibly important. My second part is that we've been going through a process of reform, but I think the time is now, we're now in the process of bedding down that reform. My focus on that will be sort of both bed down the reform, but then move on to really executing very well the key core tasks of ICANN, looking at the way it actually performs its functions and ensuring that they are actually executed very well. And part of that, of course, will be achieving and progressing the tasks put to ICANN by the Department of Commerce under the MOU.
Let's talk about the continued rollout of top-level domain names. So are you going to continue to roll out all of them slowly, or are you going to advocate that they come out rapidly over the next few years?
It's a good question, and it's an area where I need to do a lot of consultation and talking to parts of the community. I think just in terms of that issue of how speedy or otherwise, just a perspective. If you look at other markets where you've had introduction of competition to a previously incumbent monopoly situation, often that competition has been brought in, I think, appropriately with a goal which first of all says that the people who participate, that their stability, that the new marketplace is allowed to emerge in a stable way. And that, I think, has been the case, and potentially still is the evolution we're looking at in terms of TLDs. When you look forward in terms of fully competitive marketplaces and without any restrictions, if you took the example, say, of the telecommunications industry, that's often been 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the track after competition was first introduced to a marketplace. I just use it as an analogy because I think we should not pretend that the basics of market economics don't apply in this environment, and that we're going through, the internet community is going through a process of from monopoly to competition, but the competition done in a way which actually ensures stability. And I think we'll then look to see where it progresses from there.
Do you see a new focus you want to take on with ICANN?
I'm sufficiently a realist to think, ICANN was a startup organization 4 years ago, and like every startup, as I've got a lot of experience, you never get anything perfect as you're trying to grow it. In terms of focus now, I think the focus, really importantly, is about becoming a stable, well-executing, mature organization. And I think that's one of the strong areas, just in terms of being very clear about doing our job very well. We're not the government of the Internet. We do some very specific, narrow things around the technical administration of some aspect, or the administration of some technical aspects of the Internet. And we have to focus on doing those things very well, executing well and being seen to execute well. And that's certainly one of my key focuses. And I think the issues like internationalized domain names, Whois databases, issues around sponsored top-level domains, etc., I think that's really where our focus is to be going forward. We bed down reform, but we have to now focus on actually the issues of today have to be addressed. And I'm hoping that ICANN and its community will really sort of focus on getting those things addressed and getting them done relatively quickly.
So ICANN doesn't dictate what other countries want to do in regards to the Internet, besides domain name protocols?
To make the obvious comment, it is actually a balance. I think an important part of that balance is about how you actually engage in discussion around the consequences of certain actions. ICANN is not in a position to tell a sovereign can or cannot do something within its own jurisdiction. Certainly is in a situation where it can have an engagement with the sovereign which says, our experience of the internet community and best practice around all the issues that are involved means that if you're thinking of doing A, you probably should think about X, Y, Z, P, Q, R. Any of the engagement along those lines has to, I think, stay within ICANN's mission area. And I think that's probably been an important issue. There have been times when people have had a perspective in that ICANN's mission has been much broader than what it is. I don't think it's appropriate for ICANN to be sort of trying to impose any sort of engagement of models or standards around things, for instance, like internet censorship or things like that. It's just not ICANN's business whatsoever. But on things which do relate back to the domain name system and also the addressing and fetching protocol, I think that there is a role there for that. And I think actually that's one of its great strengths. I think that's one of the things that in the reform process has not been, maybe has not been insufficient focus, is that this is a great place for, it's a great forum for having those discussions and those standards and those practices visited and people can point to, such that the community can actually have one place they can go to other players, might be governments, might be large corporates, whatever, to be able to point out the consequences of actions that they're considering doing.
What are your thoughts on the things that ICANN has done well, and where can it improve?
One of the reasons that I first was very interested in the green paper put out by the United States government at the end of 97 was the model they were putting forward of how do you coordinate a set of technical issues that underpin a network which is increasingly underpinning global economic and social frameworks. If you think about the domain name system, the addressing system, and the protocols, as an industry within themselves, they're probably, you know, they're relatively small. They're less than $2 billion US. But if you think of the externalities, you think about the value that they underpin in the global economy, you're probably talking trillions. Certainly, if you talk about the Asia Pacific, which I know well, in terms of if we were to turn the internet off tomorrow, what would the implications be for trade? You'd be talking in the hundreds of billions of dollars of trade that would not take place because systems have become so reliant on the internet for those degrees of interaction. So here we are with an increasingly important infrastructure that underpins economic and social well-being, but it's not, and traditionally that's the sort of thing that governments got involved in terms of the administering and making sure the rules worked, except it doesn't work at a governmental level anymore. It's a global network, it is a network, and many of the things that have to be sort of decided upon and made to work are outside the control of any one government and often outside the control of any one community in one particular country. So I think the ICANN model of bringing the technical, the business, the academic, but very importantly the large interests together to work through those issues in an international context, I actually think it's a very exciting one. I think it's a model for areas of interdependent economic coordination in the 21st century. It's one of the reasons why I'm so interested in being the president, because I think this is a fascinating and very important model for how these sorts of issues can be well coordinated for the benefit of the world as a whole. Now, that's a sort of framework, I suppose, I have in my mind, and the reason I put it forward is that a lot of the writing about ICANN over the last 4 years has said, you know, it's a lot of it's been very critical and talks about a lot of noise. I think there are things that ICANN certainly has done wrong, and I think there's certainly growing pains for the organisation. But one thing I think we ought to recognise, both for the past and going forward, this model is designed for conflict. It's designed for interest groups to talk loudly about what they think is important or not important, to fight about that, and then for us to build around the consensus and come to a conclusion. In that sense, it is a small p political process. And like all political processes, it is inevitably noisy. Inevitably, people will complain and be unhappy if they don't get what they want. We should expect that ICANN is going to continue to generate that degree of noise. The key thing is that we actually end up with sort of outcomes that most of the community live with and it actually takes it forward.
In your view, is ICANN a more technical coordinating body, or should it help sort of reshape international law into policy?
I'm not certain that the two are such a clear dichotomy. It is its mission is very clear that it is focused on the coordination of certain technical administrative matters around the internet. And that's what it should focus on. That's what it does. That's its role in the world. But it also, by looking at those issues, inevitably the consequences of those issues, of those technical administration issues, flow into other arenas. they flow into issues like intellectual property, they flow into issues like consumer protection, they flow into issues like privacy, they flow into issues like potentially even commercial relationships between various aspects of the infrastructure providers. It flows into potentially even issues around law enforcement. The law enforcement issues are potentially issues around identification, who is databases in terms of identification for people who are committing certain types of computer crimes, etc. They're often overlapping issues with people like, for instance, the consumer protection issues, or overlapping issues with people who are concerned about ensuring that financial scams don't take place on the internet. Now, that doesn't mean that ICANN should be making up intellectual property law. It doesn't mean that ICANN should be making up criminal law. It doesn't mean that ICANN's in the role of, you know, setting forward what privacy standards should be. But what it does mean is that it plays a role in bringing those areas of the implications of the technical issues need to be brought to the right places and said, you know, for instance, WIPO, which is ICANN has a history of going to WIPO saying, you're the appropriate internet organization for the development and the elucidation of international property law internationally. What's your view on this? Or alternatively, the following things have emerged. It's not our problem to fix them, but we think you probably got to do something about it. I don't think it's an either rule. I think one is a consequence of the other.
Do you see ICANN taking on more of a broader scope of responsibility for the direction of the overall online area? Do you see that moving into more of a multinational domain names as well?
Rob, thanks for that. Let's take those two separate questions. The answer to the first one is no. I don't see ICANN getting more and more broadly engaged in, if I can use the jargon, you know, global internet government or, you know, broader roles. I mean, I think the mission statement has been very clearly reinforced through the reform process, and the mission stays very clear. This is an organization focused on coordination of some technical, of the administrative matters and some technical aspects of the internet, and it needs to stay focused, and that's what it does. In doing that, however, now to your second question, that does involve outreach. 4 years ago, very clearly the United States was the dominant internet market in the world, followed up by, you know, places like the United Kingdom, the Scandinavian countries, Australia, Japan, and then there was the next generation down behind to some Central European countries, and, you know, you could see the layers. But much of the developing world wasn't on the internet at all. Today, nearly all the developing world is now coming onto the internet in quite a stream. And for them, it's an incredible boon. It's incredibly important. If I'm in Ghana or I'm in Mozambique, the ability to access world-leading medical information immediately online is, you know, proportionally probably more important than my ability to do that in Sydney or in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of being able to access the best in the world, the internet is incredibly important in developing countries. And they're now all coming on board. So I think what was the natural constituency of ICANN 4 years ago has been greatly expanded today.
Mm-hmm.
And ICANN needs to respond to that increased need and with you know, international outreach. On the IDN issue, that's a reflection of what I've just said.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be an important issue now and going forward because the constituency has, if you like, somewhat changed. Those of us that communicate in roaming characters cannot really, I think, appreciate the degree of complexity, not only in a technical sense, but in a linguistic sense and in a cultural sense of this issue. I think that's going to be an area certainly to continue to watch.
Do you see that there's a need for kind of a global body to really govern the net?
I couldn't say I've got a perspective on that. I think that's, even if one said there was a need for it, I think the ability to create one would be incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you, Paul. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Lovely to be on the phone with you. I look forward to talking with you further because I think the things that you guys have got questions about or the issues you hear are certainly issues we need to keep hearing about too.
We've been speaking with Dr. Paul Toomey. He is the new CEO of ICANN, that's the Internet Corporation for Signed Names and Numbers.
This is Web.Guys Radio.
And I'm Webgirl Dana.
And my name is Rob Greenlee, and we hope to have you back with us again next week. I'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web.Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web.Talk Guys time, same Web.Talk Guys channel.